Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? It's that time again on a Wednesday evening. It is, what, the 18th of December, winding down Christmas next Tuesday. This is Citizen Payne, and this is the K. Thompson Live Show. I'm back this week, ladies and gentlemen, and we got a lot to talk about because it looks like things are getting hot down in D.C. But let me bring my brother in, one of our co-hosts, Mr. Byron Saunders. Opening your mic, Byron. Byron, how you doing this evening?
Yes. Yes, my brother, welcome back. You know you were missed, and yes, there's a lot happening down there in the swamp, bubbling. Everything is bubbling over down there, and finally, you know, the pot is about to explode. So here we go.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, Michael Flynn and his crew trying to get slick.
Yes.
He got caught in his own little trick bag, as we say, out in the streets. Right, Byron? That's some old school stuff.
Absolutely.
Right there. And he
very
got caught by,
so, you know,
Judge Sullivan happens to be a brother. How ironic and poetic is that for you? And he's the first one wondering why. Right? You couldn't write a better script, right?
You couldn't write a better script. Absolutely. So thank you for all the theatrics that's going on out there.
Yeah, it's interesting to me how these people think that they could, you know, I guess they thought they could just straight up change what people think about the law, do whatever they want. And I don't know whether it was the money for Mike Flynn, obviously it was the money, or it was the fact that a black man was president. You know, I'm trying to figure out when a lot of these supporters and a lot of these people, we know Trump has no allegiance to anybody, so whichever way I was going to get him paid, he has no problem with that. But a lot of these people, that these Republicans and all these people, when did they decide that treason and trying to undermine the United States was preferable or was time to do that just because there was a black president? I mean, a black president comes, and so they automatically turn their back on this nation that they've spent so much time to build up these myths about and talk about how great it was. I mean, this is a despicable thing that this guy was doing. And to have the audacity to talk about lock her up, talking about Hillary and all of these other individuals, you know, clearly the racists and you know, a lot of people are cattle and they're going to their emotions. But to go along with it, because the way I look at it, and you've been pointing it out, the Republican Party and the money that this red-haired Russian spy woman was going through, funneling through the NRA that you've been talking about for the last several months, Byron, and using that to go through the NRA and to various Republicans. You know, like you said, it's a vast conspiracy. But I also think that the voters who voted for this guy should be, you know, let's lock everybody up. Lock them all up is what I'm saying. What's your opinion?
Well, you
on
know,
that,
one of the things that's really fascinating to me is that the evidence now is out and is conclusive in this last conviction that the Russian interference focused much of its attention on reducing the African-American vote all across the country by 1% or less.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, what I find the anomaly is that surely it worked, because at the percentage that did not turn out, that 1% or less impacted on every one of the so-called swing states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, statistically, it's improbable, unless, of course, you play with the script to interject something that will cause it to be cumulative, so that in each of the electoral states that were decided, all of those were swing states that were supposed to go to Hillary. Now, did it work? Yes. Were the Russians the only ones who are promoting it? Absolutely not. The GOP bought into the concept, and they played it lock, stock, and barrel, because at the end of the day, if they were to come back by public scrutiny, there's no one who would honestly believe that they played the race card that insidious to damage our electoral process. It's an insane theory, but think about it. All of this stuff that's been happening has been racially profiled, materialized, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And with the voter oppression that went on in North Carolina, the voter oppression that went on in Georgia and in Florida, the script was followed explicitly by the same disinformation that the Russians were providing into our African-American voter electorate, and the GOP bought it, they own it, they played the race card, and now they're getting burnt by their own investigation, which is indicating the Russians did exactly that.
Right, and that was the perfect. I was going to say it's the perfect storm of all these issues converging.
Yes.
Let's go on and bring our other co-host, Brother Wayne Gilman. Brother Wayne, how are you doing this evening?
Just fine, gentlemen, just fine. And it seems like the noose is getting extremely tight. I thought of Byron yesterday when the decision came down on the Michael Flynn case, because Byron all this time had been talking about treason. And I was so taken back by the decision. Of course, Judge Sullivan in the federal district, I thought made a remarkable presentation, although there are critics out there who feel that he should recuse himself, that he seems partisan or biased or what have you. But the facts are the facts. And as Byron just pointed out, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, the race card has been their blueprint from the very beginning. And I'm also reminded of an interview that the Orange Man did probably about 20 years ago with Phil Donahue, talking about the remarkable achievements of blacks who are now becoming educated. And I don't know if you all are familiar with the YouTube. I mean, it's on YouTube now, but the interview. And, you know, that he felt that I guess there was some reference coming out of his history with the family and all, with the evidence of discrimination and charges that were out there, and about, you know, different things that had been said about him 20 years ago in his youth, talking about black people. And he said, oh, this is a remarkable time for blacks to be, you know, in a position of power because they're so educated. And that I think in the same interview, if I'm not mistaken, he made some reference to Oprah. So it may not have been Phil Donahue, but I just remember distinctly what he said. And almost like as if he said it with a certain amount of disgust, you know, that the achievements that we made is like something that is like a curse to him, that, you know, this shouldn't be. But it just sort of resonates the mindset of what he had been trying and his family had been trying to cultivate all this time. And,
sure.
You know, you go back to the Central Park Jarga case, you know, the fact that he has Rudolph Giuliani as his personal attorney. The truth has been coming out with Michael Cohen, whether people wish to believe it or not. A lot of the stuff, people who were involved in the news media back in the day witnessed half the things that were going on. And so, you know, as I said at the outset, the news is becoming tight. He's acting irrational. He's withdrawing American troops from Syria. You know, the pressure is on. He doesn't consult anyone. He just goes out, you know, and he figures, oh, it's time to bring the troops home, like as if this is, you know,
well,
even people within his own party. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he wants to say, you know, that's why he comes out and says, mission accomplished, just like George did back. You know, mission's not, I mean, the Pentagon said, no, mission's not accomplished. You know, but, you know, Republicans rely on, as does most of people in power sometimes, rely on the ignorance of the electorate, right?
I don't
so the Republicans, we know that their electorate is just about their hate for the most part, or at least this base that supports him. We know that they don't have a problem cheating. We know that they have no problem staying ignorant and not wanting to be involved. They don't want to know the facts because that destroys their worldview. And that destroys their view, their myth that they are perfect and, you know, everything that goes along with it. And so much so, they're so unintelligent or so wrapped up in their hatred or whatever it is that they go against their own self-interest, right? They're turning a blind eye to things. The Fed raised interest rates today. The guy raised interest rates just in time for the new year for people's interest rates to go up when they got to start paying for the present for Christmas. So, you know, these are individuals, and then you have Paul Ryan on talking about how what they were able to accomplish within the last. They just make stuff up, man. This is the American white supremacist narrative. Make that stuff up. Make us look, you know, like we're all great. I just want to tell everybody that my mom is out a little bit. She might be coming in a little while. But we also have a guest tonight, someone who has some experience dealing with Donald Trump in a very different arena. And he's been on the show a couple times before. We're going to go on and turn on his mic, Mr. Larry Hazard. Commissioner, is that you?
How you doing? How you doing, Eric?
All right. How are you, sir?
Okay, man. Okay.
So your boy, I know you don't do the politics, Mr. Hazard, but just a little bit of your thoughts, and then we can kind of get into some boxing things, because I want to ask you about the Deontay Wilder and Fury fight. But just do you have any comments about – well, I guess my question is, really, the individual, because we talked about this before, and you were talked about how, you know, Trump was a decent guy, you know, in terms of when you would talk boxing and stuff like that. You never got into politics and all that stuff. And I find that interesting because there's a lot of white individuals that are like that, you know, and their general dealings with black people on the surface or like day-to-day, just light stuff, you wouldn't realize or you would be surprised, as I've been surprised, I'm sure many of you guys have been surprised, that they have these extreme views that they have, which only come out when it's time to vote or support a candidate. So what is your opinion about or any thoughts that you might have if you want to talk about that? We know what'll happen if you don't watch.
I'm gonna stay out of that one, Eric. I'm gonna stay out of that one. I'm not prepared to, you know, discuss that subject. And I know you might say, well, you might have some views or opinion, but you know,
I understand
at this point. You know, I'm sure you understand where I'm coming from. I'm not gonna make any comments whatsoever.
Absolutely.
We can talk.
Let's talk about that fight, that heavyweight fight. I didn't see it, but some people were saying, you know, the Fury guy was saying he got robbed, but then they called it a draw. But the pictures I saw that Deontay Wilder knocked him down two times. So do you think Fury got robbed, or what do you think about the fight?
I think I can safely go with the popular view. When I say the popular view, I think that the popular view was that Fury won the fight. If you get a chance, Eric, if you get a chance, go to YouTube.
Right.
And they have various takes on it, where you can look at the most crucial rounds. You can look at the rounds that you say you know that you saw. I think it was the 9th and the 12th or something like that. I don't remember exactly which two rounds he knocked Fury down. But, you know, I always judge these fights as they're in progress, especially when, you know, I get the opportunity to see them from home, you know, being that the fight was in California. It was not in New Jersey. I wasn't there live for this one, but most of the time I'm usually sitting in the arena, or if it's in New Jersey, of course, you know, I'm busy at work. I don't get a chance to really actually judge. But I got a chance to sit down at home and watch the fight on TV like most viewers, like all viewers. And I only gave Deontay three rounds. I gave him round two. I remember that very distinctly. And I gave him the rounds in which he knocked Fury down. Like I say, I know it was round 12. He did it in the last round. And I think it was round 9. And let me point out something else, too, that really didn't help Deontay for judges who actually know the nuances that take place and what they should be looking for when they judge a fight. You know, several, and by the way, that fight, in my opinion, should never have ended in a draw the way that it did. Now, I don't know, let's break that down for you. One judge had it for Wilder, one judge had it for Fury, and one judge had it even on points. Okay? So what that says, Eric, and anybody else who's listening, is that you had three judges who actually were looking at three different versions of the same fight. Mm. And that's not what we seek. We seek uniformity in scoring. We seek uniformity in, you know, the determination of the winner. And that was, in many ways, from that point of view, one of the worst judging performances in terms of what we seek, you know, in judging. You had three different judges, and they were looking at, based on their score, three different versions of the same fight. And that's really not good, okay? Judges are supposed to be basing their opinions on using a point system, not a round system. And what the difference between a point system and a round system is this. For many, many years, for several years, we used to judge fights on a round system, whereas the winner of a particular round, he would just be given credit for winning the round. So you would circle the W, regardless of the manner in which he won the round. And because of that system, it was felt that many fighters were being treated unfairly because the quality of the fashion in which he won the round was not being recognized because all you did was get a W. You follow me? Okay. So what we did, we said, okay, we're going to use a point system, a 10-point system, where the winner of the round would get a maximum of 10 points, and the guy that you thought lost the round, he would get 9 points, okay? And if a round, okay, so that meant that we would now be able to use the numbers from 10 all the way down to 1 to be able to describe the quality of the round in terms of how one of the fighters won the round. And we felt that by using the points, a fighter who won a round in an overwhelming fashion now would be able to get credit for that because he would get 10 points and the opponent would get 9 or less points. Okay?
So, Commissioner, what you're saying is Fury should have won the fight based on 10-9 rounds, 10-8 rounds. The 10-8 round would have been the time that Fury got knocked down. Prior to that, he was winning all the other rounds, in your opinion.
Yes, yes. And there may have been one or two rounds where, of course, he didn't score any knockdowns, but there were one or two rounds where he didn't score any knockdowns, but the rounds were not close. They were not close rounds. And so if the round isn't close, the winner should get 10 points, and the opponent should get 8 points, okay? Because 10-9 rounds are reserved for close rounds. So what happens is, and this is the thing that, this is the logjam that we're trying to break. And I've done hundreds of seminars around the world for judging and refereeing. And one of the things that I've always emphasized in judging seminars, and judges for some reason don't want to explore, don't want to step out into new territory, get outside the box, is that, hey, if a round is not close, if you can look at a fight and you see that one fighter clearly won the round, I mean, it wasn't close. We knew that Fighter A clearly won that round. Then Fighter A should get 10 points. Fighter B should get 8 points, not 9 points, because you won't be able to differentiate between a close round and a round that's not close if you continue to score each round 10-9, 10-9, 10-9, regardless of the disparity in the performance. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Commissioner Wayne Gilman here, I've been listening intensively. I didn't get a chance to watch the fight, but the scoring situation sounds like as if there was a fix on the part of the judges, and this is not the first time, as you well know, something like this has happened over the years. You know, it sounds like the old system that you mentioned, where there wasn't a point, a numerical point system, was far more effective in determining who really won a fight as opposed to what goes on today.
Yeah, you see, here's what's happening. Here's what's happening, and I really don't want to say, you know, I stay away from the word fix. But what I'm saying is that we espouse a philosophy in boxing scoring. The philosophy centers around, okay, we're using a point system, but what's really happening is that judges are using a point system with a round system mentality, which is not good. See, because they're not using the numbers to really paint the picture of what's happening. Look, I watched this fight with Fury, and I watched this fight with Fury and Wilder. Okay, this is what judges are supposed to look for, guys. This is what judges are supposed to look for when you sit down and watch a fight. The next time you do that, keep this in mind. There are four, when you break it down, there are four components that you look for to determine the winner of each round, okay? And I emphasize that because, hey, look, everything is accumulative. Each round. So you can't look at a fight and because one particular fighter looked like he won the last two rounds, he should win the fight. Well, you know, you've got to take into account what he did from round 1 to 10. You can't just say, oh, well, he finished strong or he knocked him down in round 11 and 12. He should win. Well, what did he do in round 1 through 10? And you see what I'm saying? And in each round is a separate fight. And a judge is supposed to be able to look at a fight round by round, and if the bell rang at any point in that round, because each round is 3 minutes, so if the bell rang after a minute and a half of round one, you should be able to say who's winning, okay? And this goes back and forth in your head as the round progresses. And this is what you look for. You look for, and the way that I teach this and the concept that I try to instill in judges' minds is this. Who is the ring general? Ring generalship. Now, ring generalship is composed of three different elements. One, who is the effective puncher? Two, who is the effective aggressor? Three, who is demonstrating the most effective defense? Those three elements equals ring generalship, okay?
Mm.
You don't look for these elements separately. You look at, and now that he's the ring general, round one. He should get 10 points. That's what you look for. Who is landing the most effective punches? Who is displaying the most effective aggressiveness, utilizing the geography of the ring, in and out, okay, a side to side, okay? And who is demonstrating the greatest level of effective defense, blocking punches, parrying the punches, bobbing and weaving, slipping away, counterattacking from making his opponent miss? These are the things that you look for. These are the qualities. And if you go back now, go to YouTube, look at that fight, and keep those elements in mind, you, I think, in my opinion, will see that Fury by far was the superior fighter. Surprisingly to everybody, because here's a guy who's 6'9", and I'm telling you, he didn't have the grace and the beauty of Muhammad Ali, but I have not seen a heavyweight fighter since Muhammad Ali display that level of defense that this guy did. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't graceful. But Wilder barely laid a glove on this guy, okay, for those 12 rounds. And then, of course, Wilder, his biggest drawback, in my opinion, is that Wilder discovered that he had power in that right hand. And so now he thinks that he can knock everybody out. And obviously he's not intentionally or unintentionally listening to his trainer, Mark Breland, who was a good trainer and a very good fighter himself. Okay?
Yeah,
because
Mark Breland. I didn't know that was his trainer.
Jazz.
Yeah,
that's right. He's been around for a long time. And not only that, when Wilder first started out in the game, he obviously was listening more because he was using that jab. You know, he's a long guy. He's long. He's strong. And he's got a very powerful right hand. But he throws it haymaker style. He doesn't even throw it with form and grace. And he's got all that power, even the way that he throws it. And he, unfortunately, this is what I'm going to say, unfortunately, you know, for Wilder, in terms of what's happening, unfortunately, he has discovered that he has tremendous power in that right hand when it lands. So he knocked out several guys with that punch, okay? And so now he thinks that he can just, you know, go through a fight and depend on one punch. And that's not going to help him, you know. That's really beginning now to show that he's going to have to add more to his arsenal, if he's going to be, you know, if he's going to beat Joshua or some of the other top heavyweights that are out there, and if he thinks that he's going to hold on to that title. Because Fury exposed him. Fury exposed him more than any other fighter that he's fought. And I think that Fury, of course, when he got knocked down in round 9, okay, I think Wilder finished up winning that round, so that was a big round for him. But surprisingly enough, and Eric, you know, you've been watching fights a long time. You know what I'm talking about, too. And so do you, Wayne. I'm sure that
he knocked
Fury down in the 12th round and actually ended up in the round backing away, backing up. You know what I mean? Instead of finishing him, trying to finish him up, he was like running, you know, like he ran out of gas. And who finishes up like that in the final round? I'm saying, oh, my gosh, Wilder, what the hell are you doing? But I gave
you
him the 12th round.
You think he prepared
anyway
for that fight? I'm sorry. I don't mean to break
that's
your
all right
thought. But I was just wondering, do you think he really prepared for that bout?
Well, I think he prepared for it. But like I said, he comes into a fight thinking that all he's going to do is go in there, land a big punch, and it's going to be over. See?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. You know, he can be prepared. See, when Mike Tyson fought Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson was not prepared for that fight.
Right, right.
There's a big difference. He didn't train, and the reason he comes to mind is because they just did on 30-30. They just had that the other night, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 30-30. Okay. And I know personally that Mike did not prepare for that. See, there's a difference in being prepared and not being prepared. Wilder was prepared, okay, in terms of the training. He probably had an 8 to 10 week camp. You know, I guess he was in shape physically, okay, but he wasn't prepared, I think, mentally.
Mentally, yeah.
Because mentally. You know, he come into the fight, he already had in his mind, hey, I'm going in here, you know, with this right hand. This is my baby. I'm going in there, and I'm going to take this right hand. I'm going to knock this guy out, and it's going to be over. And then it didn't happen. And he refused to. It seemed like he refused to even modify his strategy. You know, he just kept throwing that right hand. And after a while, you know, Fury, you know, he's leaning back. You remember how Ali used to lean back from punches and slip to the side? And here's a guy, 6'9". You know, a 6'9 fighter, somebody that tall, you know, most of the guys are punching up to him anyway.
Yeah, right.
This guy was bobbing and weaving. Who does that at 6'9"?
I've seen him do that online.
You know?
A couple of times I did see clips about him fighting online in other fights. Yeah, he's nice with the, you know, I was impressed with that ability.
Yeah.
That,
yeah,
you know, for his size, you know, and stuff like that, the way he's able to do that.
Yeah, he's
now, let me,
not pretty.
Hazard, yeah, not pretty. Let me ask you, so the take on Deontay Wilder that I've heard from some people, and I think Mike said, that he hasn't really fought anybody. And also, to me, he just seems like he's a big, you know, he's got that big punch, and he could box a little bit. But his skill level to really go against someone like Anthony Joshua, who I'm not saying his skill level is superior by any means, but how do you rate Deontay Wilder as a fighter and also as a quality heavyweight?
Well, you know, when we start talking about rating fighters, there's usually two ways in which we attempt to rate the fighters in terms of how good he is, you know, his greatness, et cetera. We usually make a comparison between who he's fought during his era, which is right now, and we usually use comparisons to eras past. You know, there's always been, in rating Ali, would he have whipped Marciano? Would he have whipped Joe Louis? Blah, blah, blah. You understand where I'm coming from. Okay.
But I'm talking about in terms of him being good in terms of other fighters. I mean, is he achieving all of this success now because he's bigger than everybody else, stronger than anybody else, and he's got a few of these skills that stand out, but not all around a good fighter? Or is it that he is really a good fighter? You know what I'm saying? Is his rep better than he actually is? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Here's my take on it. Here's what I see. Based on the fighters that he's fighting, he's beat everybody who they put in front of him. Okay?
Right.
And he's knocked both of them out. Now, someone might say, well, he hasn't fought anybody. Well, he's fought guys on the same level as any of the other so-called top heavyweights of his day has fought.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know, he fought big King Kong Ortiz. That was another knockdown drag out. I don't know if you saw that one. Okay.
Didn't see that. I'm gonna have to look that one up.
He had Ortiz down. Ortiz had him down. And he got up and knocked him out. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
With that one punch. See, that's what gave him even more confidence in his punch. So he has fought the guy from Haiti. Oh my gosh, his name. And the reason it's hard for me to remember these guys today because these guys in no way compare to some of the heavyweights and fighters of the past who you couldn't forget their names. You follow me?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But, you couldn't forget Tyson, Frazier, Ali, Holmes, Norton. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, these guys were real.
But even dudes like Ernie Schaefer and Ronnie Lyle, right? Even those guys.
You know, Ron Lyle, okay? So you see my point. You see my point. It's hard for me, even I can't remember the names of some of these guys, okay?
Right.
So, but in fairness to him, I have to say that, hey, look, he's fought the same caliber that the other guys have fought. Joshua, of course, beat Klitschko. So he never fought. He didn't fight Klitschko. Klitschko was out of it. Okay,
right.
Joshua beat him and he left. Okay? But, he's fought guys that are of the same caliber, I would say, as Joshua. Now what's happening, the field has gotten very thin now. And so the money now calls for him to fight the guys the very best. And the big money calls for him to fight Joshua. That's the big fight. That's the big fight. So I'm not going to completely discredit him, for that one fight. He has done well against all of the other heavyweights out there, just as good as Joshua and some of the other guys, So I got to give him that.
So as we close out, Mr. Hazard, are there any up and coming? Who do you like in as fighters, up and coming guys in any division? I saw about these twin brothers. They seem to be pretty good fighters. Obviously, they're champions.
The Charlos. I like Errol Spence. I like Sean Porter. Those are my top guys. I like Terrence Crawford. Now, the up-and-coming kid, real kid, that we got our eyes on and we got to be pulling for is a youngster from Newark named Shakur Stevenson. He's our silver medalist in the Olympics right out of Newark, New Jersey. And he's on the rise, okay? So, there are some interesting names. There's some interesting fighters coming up. And, of course, New Jersey, we're going through a little bit of a resurgence now, again, with boxing, which is very good. So I'm happy to
be around
for that.
Yeah, the Hard Rock, right? The Hard Rock is the place that's...
Yeah, the Hard Rock and the Ocean Casino. So, I've been blessed to be around for boxing in New Jersey in what I call the glory days of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and the 2000s. You know, now I left for a while. Now I'm back, you know, and thank God, you know, I've been blessed to be around for what I think is going to be somewhat of a resurgence. It'll never get back to the way it once was. The fighters are
right.
Just not there.
That, yeah, I was just going to ask that, you know, because as you mentioned that, you know, we go back and then, you know, we were talking about local talent, the young man who's coming out of Newark, and I'm reminded of when you mentioned Mark Breland, it took me back to my old neighborhood in Bed-Stuy because he used to box in that he started out.
Good brother.
Good brother.
Let me just
boxing,
throw it out there. Good, yeah. Nice brother, Mark Breland. Really good.
Right.
Good, nice brother.
Yeah, you know. But why isn't it going to go, in your estimation, back to the glory days like Ali and Frazier and Hitman Hearns and, you know, all the, you know, all those guys?
What was that? I kind of missed the early part of your question.
No, I was just wondering, you know, you were saying that it would never go back to the glory days, and right. I was just wondering, why do you feel that way?
Well, the reason I say that, Wayne, is that, you know, everything changes as time goes on, and there's so many elements that no longer exists anymore. Number one, you don't have the same mentality going into boxing anymore. A lot of the youngsters, especially from the inner cities, you know, from our neighborhoods, they don't box now. They play basketball and football. They go for that real, you know, the easier money, the bigger money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They go for the big contracts. You know, you got your LeBronses, and you got all of those guys as the role models. And so more kids are playing basketball now and football. They don't have to
right.
fight, okay?
Right.
Then, of course, you don't have the facilities, the club, you know, the gyms that were once prevalent in our neighborhoods. You know, when we were growing up, hey, listen, Eric, I remember when I was boxing as a youngster coming up in Newark, your father and your uncle, they used to come out to the fights to see me fight, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that enthusiasm coming from in the community, within the neighborhood
right.
anymore.
Right.
Where everybody fought, you know?
Right.
Well, if you were boxing, your teachers, your Sunday school teacher came out, you know, to encourage you. And everybody wanted a piece of that glory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then there were those neighborhood rivalries. When we were growing
right.
up in the inner cities, you know, the kid from the east side is fighting somebody from up on the west side and all that.
Right.
Everybody had their local heroes in the neighborhood. And then, of course, we had the ethnic element and we had the racial element, which was good.
Right.
It was healthy. It wasn't like a dirty thing. You know what I mean? You know,
it just fed the game. It fed the excitement about it.
That was part of the game, you know. And so we played up that. You know, everybody had pride in their guy, and they came out. Then you had the smaller arenas locally, right here in Newark.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
In my neighborhood, right above Springfield Avenue, you had Laurel Gardens going all the way back in the heydays. And then you had the arena up on South Orange Avenue, you know.
Right.
All around the city of Newark, Patterson, Elizabeth, you had the Elks Club. Out in Elizabeth, the Armory, Elizabeth Armory, you know.
Oh yeah.
You had Ice World up on Route 46, you know, and even in Patterson, Jersey City, you had the Jersey City Armory, you know. You had all of these places. You had, and then most of all, you don't have the teachers around that you had back in the day. Okay, Wayne mentions Brooklyn. Do you realize how many guys old man George Washington cultivated over there in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Mark Breland,
yeah,
Riddick Bowe, you know?
Bring me back.
Oh, man, come on. All of these guys that come out of Brooklyn, right out of his gym, the old man,
right.
He cultivated these kids off the street, you know? So you don't have that anymore. There's no
right.
more Tim Stills walking around the streets of Newark anymore, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Eric, you know,
mm-hmm.
no more Buddy Gee, no more George Branches, no more of the real teachers that know
right.
how to teach kids the rudiments of the sport. You know,
and Commissioner, not to interrupt again, but you know, one thing I find interesting: these millennials seem to be attracted to this what mixed boxing, where you have a little bit of wrestling
arts.
And yeah, yeah,
MMA.
Yeah,
MMA.
What's your
right.
take on that? I mean, that's not really fighting in the art that we.
No, it's not. And we were, you know, I wrote the rules for MMA, the unified rules for that, and they got their big start. Right here in New Jersey, okay, because they weren't accepted politically or otherwise when they first started out. And
right,
they refined
right.
the sport. And so it's very appealing to a certain segment of a population who were wrestlers in college and high school. And so,
right.
you know, that mixed with the traditional martial arts or Brazilian jiu-jitsu, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have found a competitive source to make money beyond college wrestling, beyond high school wrestling. So it has become
right.
very, very popular. It has very
that
popular.
Could, that they
I'll
could be taken
this.
Seriously in, because if it wasn't that, they had to go into professional wrestling and look like, you know, look make-believe. You know,
well,
a lot of these
you know
guys
what?
Are.
That's right. That's right. They can go into real wrestling or,
right.
you know, what they call, well, they call it grappling. You know, they got different
yeah.
phases. They got grappling and jiu-jitsu, you know.
Let me ask you, this is kind of a personal question. So do you remember Curtis Moore? They used to call him Chinky, that grew up
of
in my
course.
Father's
I
neighborhood.
Know.
That was
of
my
course.
Cousin, on my mother's side, my cousin's father. Chinky Moore, and the Dukers AC, I thought, was a boxing club. Was that correct? My father used to talk about the Dukers.
I was a Duker.
You were
a
Duker, okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
My pop used to talk about those guys are some bad dudes, Dukers AC.
Oh, man. You know, it's only five of us left from
wow.
well, your father, he probably remembers the Dukers before my group, you know, before our group, because
mm-hmm.
it was Tim Steele who revived the Dukers from his day. So he knew what it did for the guys. So he wanted to keep that going. And
mm-hmm.
what he did, he revived the Dukers. So I was a part of that group. And it's only five
mm-hmm.
of us left. I was just talking to one of our old teammates, a guy named Arthur Randolph, who now lives in Georgia. And he called
mm-hmm.
me the other day to wish me a happy, you know, Merry Christmas and all. And he's asking me, Larry, is so-and-so. I said, no, man, Spooky's dead. Preston Crump is dead. Alvin Johnson's gone. Danny's
wow.
gone. Freddie Johnson's gone, you know. And I started naming these guys. You know, Richie Parham's gone. Leroy Holden. Everybody's gone. These are the guys who were the Dukers that when I was boxing and when your father and your uncle used to come out to the Elizabeth Elks Club and to the Elizabeth
mm-hmm.
Armory to see us perform. And then they used
mm-hmm.
to put the ring up in the playground out on West Kenny Street every summer, okay, and for the neighborhood. We used to
mm-hmm.
compete against the Morton Street Boys Club, you know.
Hmm.
So, you know, those days are gone, man. And,
yeah.
and you mentioned Curtis Moore. Of course, I knew Mr. Moore. I knew Curtis, okay?
Yeah.
Him. And you had Mr. Nolly from the Morton Street Boys Club down there where they was training guys down there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah,
those
Mr.
days
Moore
are gone.
Took me in one of those gyms downtown one time. I went with him and my cousin Chap, and we were just doing a little workout up there. But they had the gym up in there, so it's a long time
Yeah, that
ago.
Was Muxie Dunn. That was Muxie Daniels' gym downtown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know that building is still there, right next
oh, really?
To the arena. Right next to the arena. Yeah, that's the building, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Hazard, we want to thank you. It's our time's about up. We want to thank you for calling in. And it's always a joy to talk to you, sir, as you know. I always get a kick out of talking to you. And we're going to have to catch up sometime. And the next fight out here in AC – I'm going to be calling you, so maybe I could roll down there, you know, just be in the environment, you know, and be able to check it out. So, you know, Al Heyman is an old friend of mine. I know that he One last question before you go. You think Floyd's going to fight again?
I really don't know. But if the money is right, I'd say yes. If the money is right, I say yes. Because I don't know. I guess the whole thing, you never get too much money.
That's what they say. You know?
Floyd don't need the money. Who am I to say what a man needs? He doesn't appear to need the money. He doesn't appear. Mm-hmm. But you never get too much money. So if the money is right, you know, I would say he would come back. And there's a lot of these guys out here he could still be.
Yeah.
He could still be. Because he's still young.
That's true. Yeah.
He's young for a fighter today, you know.
And that lineage he comes from is no joke.
But, you know, I'm sorry. I guess we're all virtually out of time. But I'm just, you know, sometimes you get to a point where, like, Muhammad Ali, this is just the last point I want to make. I hate when they think that, you know, at 40 they're invincible. I know Mayweather is nowhere near that, but the bottom line is that you have to draw the line when you think you've had enough, you know? And just, I would think, before it affects you mentally, because I think that's the problem.
Well, yeah, especially in boxing. These guys, they sit back and they look at the talent that's out there now. And they have dreams, you know, they have flashbacks to when they were doing it, okay? And their mind starts telling them that they can do things that their bodies just can't live up to.
Exactly, right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what happens. You know, the mind overpowers it all, and then they really start getting hurt.
Yeah, you know. That's true. Well, there it is. I want to thank you, Mr. Hazard, for talking to us. Like I said, it's always a joy to talk to you, sir. Get your opinions on the fight game and just the general wisdom that you have, you know, because, you know, it's a metaphor, right? Boxing is a metaphor.
I
find a lot of times for things we have to struggle through in life. So, Larry Hazard, thanks for calling in again, sir. We will talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Thank you. All the best. Happy holidays.
Take care, sir.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Same to you guys. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
There it is, gentlemen. It's always great to talk to Mr. Hazard, you know. I mean, he's got such a wealth of history. And he's been around.
Sure.
I mean, talk about having a front row seat to the history of boxing. And certainly, I mean, he's even been in movies, you know. He's been in a couple of a couple of boxing movies playing a referee, so... You know, I mean, he's around these parts. And I'm sure you guys know he's legendary. So we got about six more minutes, and I just want to pick up, you know, a couple of thoughts that we have about the political situation. I'm interested to hear what you guys think will be the next move. You know, I was tempted to put on my Facebook, I was taking bets to see how long it would be before Donald Trump makes a negative tweet about the judge in the Flynn case. You know how he did to that Mexican judge because he was going against somebody. So I was going to put up a how long do you think it's going to be for Trump before he tries to affect that? Because, you know, as you guys know, he's been sending out messages to people, you know, calling Cohen a rat and Flynn's a good guy and all this madness. What do you guys think about that as we got about 5 minutes to go?
The GOP has already been playing the race card for quite some time. You may reflect on the reason why not Cohen, the other guy, Manafort. The Manafort wanted to change his venue out of the D.C. court was because their defense attorneys felt that there were too many African Americans in the jury pool. So they wanted to have the venue move to Roanoke, Virginia.
Mm.
That's right. Manafort.
Wow.
That's right. Okay, so that tells you, that should tell you everything you need to know about
Roanoke.
That particular, yeah, Roanoke, Virginia, the star city of the South.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So see the games that the defense is playing, and that's why this week's hero is the judge who stood up for the flag.
Right.
That's right, he stood up for the flag, and he pointed to it and said, you have dishonored this flag, and the word treason is what he used for that kind of anyway, it's been long been overdue. The word is going to be used more and more because what was done, in effect, has been a treasonous criminal act by the GOP and current president occupying the White House.
You called
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. I mean, this guy's a. I mean, you know, I've been saying it too. This guy's a criminal in the White House, and
yeah.
Clearly, he's getting exposed for the criminal activity that him and his family have been engaging in all the time. And you know, anytime somebody starts saying it didn't happen, and if it did happen, it wasn't a crime. If it did happen, so and so did it, and if so and so did it, it wasn't really a crime. You know, it's like you're guilty as hell. You know, you sound
you.
Real guilty. Stop talking, you know?
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out where Rudy Giuliani's going with all this. I mean, it's like every weekend talk shows. It just amazes me that
I mean,
he makes himself look like as if he's not even accomplished as somebody who studied law, you know?
Right.
I mean, given
right.
his background as a former prosecutor here.
Yeah.
Let
I mean, these
man.
Guys are going against the law. I mean, you know, really trying to, I mean, Rudy sounds like he's just trying to muddy the waters because he sounds incoherent. You know, he sounds
yeah.
kind of like
really.
he's just grasping at straws and doesn't know what he's talking mm-hmm. about. You know, I caught just a little bit. I didn't watch all of the interview, but he sounds nutty, you know.
It's always, you know, I mean, the thing is, it defies logic, and yet, you know, I don't know. I guess he's being paid well for saying this, and that's it. But, you know, I just think it's just a matter of time, you know, at
so
this point. All right.
I hear you. As we go out, we got like two minutes and 30 seconds. I want to ask you guys something about this reform bill today. What was that? Was it the justice or criminal reform bill that they did? So you think that Jared? Here's the question: you think that Jared's support in that was based solely on the fact that his dad was locked up? What do you guys think, real quick? You know, Van Jones is praising this guy,
you know,
like, you know, whatever, but his dad blocked up. Of course he's going
to
want to get the chance.
Yeah.
Of course he is, you know. Put him on a chain gang first. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. There it is.
Yeah. You're right
we're
about
out of time.
That.
I like how you guys backed away from that when you guys didn't go anywhere near that one.
No. I mean, I give credit to Kanye and his spouse for pushing that through, you know? I mean, they're
right.
good friends with Jared.
Right.
I guess. I don't
God
know.
God bless all. God, no, I'm not going to say God
please.
Bless all those people. Well, Brother Wayne Gilman. Well, Brother Byron, thanks for calling in. Sir, give the people your sign off, my brother. Let them know.
Peace and love. Peace and love always, and Merry Christmas.
There it is. Brother Byron
Saunders,
ladies
and
gentlemen.
Yeah, I have to come up with something every week myself. You know, I just.
Something witty?
Whatever comes to mind, you know, but peace and love. And Merry. I hope it's a great Christmas and a blessed new year for everybody.
Amen.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Have a happy holiday.
Yes, all right.
We'll be talking again next Wednesday, the day after Christmas.
Day after. That's right.
Right.
There you go.
All right.
Bye. All right.
Talk
okay.
to you guys next week.
Don't eat
all
too
right.
much now. All right.
All right, brother. This has been the Kate Thompson Live Show. You can reach us. You can listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. if you want to listen to us live. And we're also archived, so we've got some really good shows. We know a lot of people out there have been listening to us. We want to encourage more people to listen to us. My name is Citizen Payne. known as The Sun. My mom will be back next week. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show. See you again next week, everybody. Talk to you soon. Have a happy holiday. Be safe out there.